Come into my office. August, come into my office. It's more an honour, eh, Shaw, do. A band Shaw and you. August, but why, Lum? But how's break as a horse lock and dinner? A tan Shaw and you. August, Kaharjahas, a Yanu. Lenadini, a ta Tulshanak. A Hapton Shaw and you. August, a Rakanla. Hun, Anyam Liam Olinshi. Agus Hivnan Liam Olinshi. A Kenyal. A Kenyal Bio. I would like to thank you for inviting me here this evening. I would also like to offer my thanks and congratulations to all of you who have gathered here this evening, and in particular to the National Graves Association, for the marvellous work they do in keeping green the memory of all our patriots, and in particular, on this spot, the memory of the late General Liam Lynch. When we look at that solemn face, the portrait, the posed picture of General Liam Lynch, it would be very easy to forget that Liam Lynch, had he lived for another few months, he would only have reached his 30th year. When Liam Lynch breathed his last, as his lifeblood seeped away on this mountainside, Liam Lynch was but 29 years of age. And in those brief few years, what a fabulous achievement, what sacrifice, what dedication, what a mountain he had climbed in terms of his achievements. Since then, the wise men, as they would like to call themselves and like to think of themselves, have told us that Lynch and his gallant comrades and all of those who stood so firmly behind the Republic and in favour of the Republic, that they had made a mistake, that there were other ways of achieving what they sought to achieve. They attempted to denigrate not just the memory, but the life's work and achievement, and possibly more seriously still, that very noble objective for which Liam Lynch laid down his life those decades ago on this mountainside. These people claiming to be the wise men, the academics, the journalists, the media people, they have told us that so much more could have been achieved by other means. They have told us since, and claimed a spurious legitimacy for democracy. They have very callously overlooked the fact that three times before the uprising in 1916, three occasions the Irish people had voted for independence in the 30 years before Easter of 1916. And on each occasion, the imperial power in Britain had ignored, set aside, and contemptuously dismissed what the Irish people had voted for. What is also sometimes overlooked by the enemies of the Republic is that in 1918 and in 1920, the people of Ireland had voted for a republic, and they were sent back to vote again with the threat of immediate and terrible war if they didn't vote against the republic. It is not recently that the politicians in Dublin have acquired the knack of sending the Irish people back to vote again if their vote, the vote of a sovereign people, does not please those who sit in the halls and corridors of power. And let us not forget, my friends, that it was that threat of immediate and terrible war that persuaded a slim majority of the population to vote for the treaty. In reality, as the other great leader, one of the other great heroes of the Republic, Mello, said, it was not by the will of the people that the Republic was disestablished. It was by the terror and fear of the people they voted for something less than the Republic. And let us keep in mind that when Liam Lynch spoke of the Republic, that wonderful phrase that I see inscribed on your pamphlet, on the memoriam card for Liam Lynch, we have elected to live under an Irish Republic and will live under no other law, that Liam Lynch was in no doubt as to what he was standing for. There was no ambiguity in Liam Lynch's mind or those of their comrades. Lynch looked for a republic as outlined in the spirit of the Proclamation of 1916, a republic that had been further outlined in the Democratic Declaration of 1919. A republic, as he said, we have declared for, and nothing else we will settle for. And let us keep in mind that it was more than mere independence. Independence was sought. Self-determination was asked for, so that we would have a republic that followed the ethos of the 1916 proclamation and the 1919 Democratic Declaration. And that republic, let us be in no doubt, a republic where there were values, the values that said the wealth of this country would be used for the common good of the people. A republic where our people would be sovereign and our state would be secular. That is what we lost when we lost the republic. A state where the wealth of this nation was not used for the common good, but was used instead for the benefit of a very few. Where through those hungry 30s, 40s and 50s, where the common people of this country were forced to live in poverty or to emigrate. That's what we lost when we lost the republic that Liam Lynch so nobly gave his life for. It was a republic where, because the powers that be feared the might of a sovereign people, that they abandoned a secular republic. And a secular republic is not simply a republic that allows people to choose where they go to worship on a Sunday morning. A secular republic is a republic where the power of church and state are separate. A state where they do not draw upon the clergy of any sect to keep the people in subjection. Where the clergy do not tell those people loyal to the Republic and the memory of the Republic that they should not attend a ceremony on the mountainside to commemorate the great and noble General Liam Lynch, as tragically was said on the morning this monument was unveiled. When, thankfully, the Irish people in this heroic and noble area had the gumption to turn away from those who would counsel against standing by the Republic, who clearly knew that, well, if we do take our faith from Rome, we take our politics from home. And when Tomás McCartan formed up his volunteers and said, no, we will not have that. And bear in mind that that subjection, when we give up the secularism of a state that Liam Lynch died for, that glorious Republic that disappeared, that in no way can be underestimated, those values. We lost enormously, and we are feeling it still, as we can see what was used for so many years to keep us in subjection. It's also something to keep in mind that it was the Republic, 32 countywide sovereign and secular. A republic based on the principles of republicanism. The republicanism that we took first and foremost from France, where the key note for all of our people was liberty, equality, and fraternity. But where we also give tribute as Irish Republicans to those from where we found this wonderful and noble philosophy. And let us not forget, and let's always be magnanimous enough to acknowledge the debt we owe to the great English Republican Tom Paine, who more than anybody else outlined the republicanism that demanded the common good, the good of all the people. And that is among the values that we lost when the Republic was overthrown by those who were answering to their imperial masters in London. And it is always worth remembering that the enemy of that type of a republic does not only come speaking with strange foreign accents or come wearing the uniform of the crown, because those who carried out the work of the empire, those who shot Liam Lynch to death on this mountainside, came wearing the uniform of what they called the National Army, and tragically and unfortunately flying the flag of the Republic. Those are the cruel aspects. We commemorate Liam Lynch today because we remember the sacrifice that Liam Lynch made, the contribution he made. We may now regret, as we certainly do, the Republic that was lost with the treaty, the Republic that went down with all its values, with the progress we could have made after the years of sacrifice and struggle, how we went backwards in spite of the fact that we had a modicum of independence because we didn't have the Republic that Lynch and all those others had fought and died and bled for. But what we will not forget either, although we regret what we have lost, we drew then inspiration from the words and deeds and actions of those people. We remember and draw inspiration today from the values that Lynch espoused, from that wonderful and noble spirit. A man at 29 years of age with years in front of him, a talented and able man, a man who could have probably had a very comfortable life under different circumstances, but because he knew what was at stake, he set aside the prejudices, the media that condemned him, the church that was willing to condemn him, the wealthy that were compelled to condemn him, the British Empire that sent its weaponry and its gold.